Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. And this week on Ring of Fire, it is March Midterm Madness. We're going to be revisiting several interviews from recent months where I discussed the Democrats' prospects in the 2022 midterms, conversations with Jeff Waldorf, host of Around the Nation, and Mike Figueredo, the host of The Humanist Report, both two wonderful programs that you need to go subscribe to on YouTube. These guys, absolutely some of the best out there. And we had, again, some wonderful conversations about what could and should happen in this year's midterm races. So, without further ado, let's revisit those interviews. ...2021 is quickly coming to a close, and even though Biden's first year doesn't officially end until January 20th, it is pertinent to look back at this year, 2021, to see how Biden has done. The good, the bad, the ugly, every bit of it. Some his fault, some obviously not. And joining me now to talk about this is Jeff Waldorf, host of Around the Nation. You can find him on YouTube. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today on Ring of Fire.
Well, thank you, Farron. I really, really appreciate the invite. I'm really happy to be here and to talk to you today.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, look, there's a lot to talk about. We've seen quite a bit with President Biden this year. And as I mentioned, you know, look, there's plenty of things that he's done that are totally his fault. Things that he hasn't done, obviously his fault. And then some things that clearly are not. But sure, you're president, you get blamed for it as part of the job. But right now, he's sitting at an approval rating of what, 42% aggregate, maybe up to 44. So, you know, at this point, what needs to happen? Like, what could we do possibly, within the next month or so? Is there a way to turn that around? Because once we get into midterms, not much, I think, is going to move in the way of his polling. So what's he got to do right now to make that happen?
Well, I mean, if you're talking things that he could unilaterally do without Congress, because what Congress is, it's just basically a dead end. He can't get anything done. Manchin and Sinema, they're going to block every single thing that comes across their desk. And so if you're talking unilateral action, two things right off the bat: cancel student loan debt and legalizing cannabis, marijuana, or at least rescheduling it to something that's no longer Schedule One, which it's still insane to think that it's considered to have absolutely no medicinal value when we know that that's not the truth. That's not backed up by facts and science. And what did Biden say? I thought he said he was going to follow the science. Interesting.
Well, and you know, it's funny that you pointed out those two things, because those are the exact same two things that I've been pointing out. And I think at this point, that is what Biden has to do. He has to do something from him. You know, we're coming up on Christmas season. Biden, you've got to give us a present. This cannot be a group present from the whole Democratic Party. People need to see that you are doing something to make their lives better. Because when the midterms roll around and they ask the question like they always do, are you better off today than you were 2 years ago? I mean, honestly, look around. These people are going to say no. No, they're not.
Right.
Not much has changed. And of course, we have the, you know, scaled down infrastructure package that has been signed into law. But a lot of that can't even become a reality without Build Back Better, which is still being whittled down. God only knows what that's going to be. And you're relying on your Manchins, your Sinemas, your testers, just this handful of individuals who say, nope, I'm going to obstruct just for the sake of obstructing, and of course, donor wishes. But it's just dooming this entire party. And we're all watching this happen. You and I, we do this every day, and we read the news all day, and we just watch it happen in slow motion. And all we can do is warn people. But, you know, at the end of the day, you and I don't get to make the laws. We don't get to vote on these things. And so it does get difficult to watch all the horrible things happen, because you know we need this legislation and it's not happening.
Well, let me just say too, look, Biden had already foreshadowed his presidency. All of this was already set to happen. Why? Well, that's when he told the donors, nothing will fundamentally change. So we're not expecting a gift. We're not expecting a gift of the bourse. Unless, of course, you count the Fox News tree burning down. That is kind of funny. But no, as far as anything to make people's lives materially better, I mean, yes, you can count the good because we are fair and balanced, huh? You know, we can count the child tax credits. No, that's a fantastic idea. Those have gone out to, you know, millions of families. It's great. Republicans hate it. Even I think there are even some Democrats that hate it. But that was a good thing. That does help to increase the, you know, material conditions for the average American. But without those other things, without childcare, without, you know, paid family leave, not even the paltry 4 weeks, we should be having 12, but we've got nothing. And that's all of a result, as you said, a couple of people who, thanks to donor interests who do not want this, and because of the failure of the Democratic Party, and you can even point at progressives for not pushing the, you know, make sure the bipartisan infrastructure bill and Build Back Better were passed together. They did not follow through. They did not hold the line on that promise. With that, since bipartisan infrastructure passed, we're not getting Build Back Better. It's not happening. We're not getting a gift. We're getting coal in our stockings, which, by the way, Joe Manchin absolutely loves.
Well, and of course, you know, we can't not talk about the fact that Joe Biden single-handedly, as we all know, destroyed the supply chain. I don't know how he did it, but if you watch any conservative media, Joe Biden has ruined commerce here in
destroyed.
The United States. So this is a good example, though. This is one thing, for the most part, I guess you would say, Biden doesn't have control over the supply chain. It's a bad thing that is happening, obviously. It was happening last year when store shelves literally were empty, unlike now. You know, you couldn't find, obviously, toilet paper, but paper plates, paper towels, canned soup was gone last year, you know, from April to June, roughly, and it still hasn't bounced back. But it's all Biden's fault, right?
Are you sure that the soup isn't because of Antifa? Because, you know, they like soup.
For their families.
For their families. Yes. But now you bring up a great point when you talk about how they're blaming Joe Biden for the supply chain issues. This is a result of COVID. This is a result. I don't think any president, honestly, could have anticipated that this would happen. Even, and I'll say something controversial, even Donald Trump probably couldn't have seen this happen and wouldn't have had much control over this. Right. Now, again, if you want to talk about response to the pandemic, as far as what he did wrong in order to prolong it, in order to make it worse, fine. But you still also will have always had these supply chain issues during this time because of economic forces outside of their control. You have factories, for example, all over the world. Again, this isn't just an American virus. The conservatives always love to point at Wuhan and China. Well, China is where we get a lot of stuff of our stuff manufactured. And it shut down China. And it shut down a lot of manufacturing all over the world, which is creating the supply chain. And by the way, something that also needs to be addressed as well is labor. Okay. We're going to talk about labor. We're going to talk about the great resignation is what they're calling it, where people are quitting their jobs, mainly COVID. That's a big part of it. A lot of people retired as a result of COVID. And that economic issue, you also have a result of childcare. You also had over 780,000 Americans that have died from COVID that are no longer in the workforce. And you've got shortages everywhere. And I've done numerous stories after story after story of how badly people in the service industry were treated during the time of COVID. And so that's the staffing shortage. But that's not necessarily related to the supply chain. But what is truckers. There's a trucker shortage. And it's not because there's not people willing to be a trucker. It's that the pay has not kept up. And the pay is nowhere near it needs to be to sustain a large trucking base.
Well, and Republicans have also turned around and they've said, well, part of the problem is Buttigieg. Buttigieg goes on paternity leave. Because of that, you know, you've got the ships that are off the coast of California. And it's so ridiculous. Look, if you want to criticize Buttigieg for anything other than paternity leave, I'll hear you out on that, mm-hmm. but that's an idiotic argument. And of course they're using it. That's part of the culture war issue mm-hmm. because he's paternity leave because he's a man. Also, he's not a straight man. Oh God, that gets the Republicans all drummed up and crazy. And that's why they're doing it. It's not because they actually think he's part of the supply chain problem. It's to remind people that he's a gay man.
And not only that, let me just add to that as well. It's not just about, I mean, yes, definitely part of the culture wars. But it's not just the fact that he's a gay man. It's just the fact that he's basically promoting the idea by taking paternity leave himself that, hey, fathers and mothers, paid leave. You don't want that. Paid leave bad because look at Buttigieg. You don't like Buttigieg. Because he's gay and he's immoral, right? And he took paid leave. He took paternity leave. That means you shouldn't take paternity leave either. Nobody should have paternity leave. Get back to work. Get back to the mines.
Yeah, and we've certainly seen them say that, you know, that nobody mm-hmm. should have. Lauren Boebert, you know, she used the argument that because she gave birth to one of her kids in a car, nobody should get maternity leave either. Now, I'm not sure what the correlation is there, but that's what she said. Also, totally not surprised that that woman gave birth in a car. She
not
seems like that is like right on par, especially with her new little Christmas card out, completely tasteless. The kids look like they're in a friggin' hostage video. None of them look happy to be there, but they're all posing there with their crazy expensive weapons of death. And she's just grinning like a big absolute moron behind them because this is Y'al-Qaeda. That's who they are.
Yep.
And it's, it's sick, especially in the wake of what happened last week. But,
absolutely.
But that's what we, and by we, I mean like me and you and everybody else in this industry, not necessarily the Democratic Party, but that's what we're up against. Because we have to go against that every day. We have to talk mm-hmm. about these things. We have to remind people this is not normal. Because if we don't, the right-wing echo chamber is so much bigger, so much better funded than we are, that they're going to win the day. And eventually those Christmas cards with your AK-47s become the norm here in America. It's not a fun task, but there's really not enough of us out here doing this either. And that's, you know, sad enough as it is.
No, absolutely. Let me just go back to the hostage video, right? Or the hostage picture. Are you sure it's not the camera people that are the hostage? People taking the picture, you know, walking in. Oh my God, what have I come into? But walked into. Oh no, take our picture, or else make it extra jolly.
I mean, I would feel threatened if I received that in the mail.
Oh yeah,
I mean that almost
like what are you trying to tell me here?
Exactly. That's going on Christmas, really. So you know, to bring this all back, obviously mm-hmm. talking about Biden's first year, and again the Lauren Boebert thing does tie in because he's also up against the crazies that have taken mm-hmm. over the party. Your Lauren Boeberts, your Taylor Greens, your Gateses, who for some reason still hasn't been indicted, your Jim Jordans, your Gohmerts, your Gozars. The list is increasing in the number of just absolutely deranged individuals that are constantly lobbying baseless attacks on the left. And again, they appear to win the day because it's hard to refute something that is patently untrue. Now, again, mm-hmm. we try it. The Democrats try it every day. But when they just make something up and all you can say is, no, that's not true. You know, people say, well, but what's your proof? And the proof is because it's just made up. You know, there's no evidence to show it's not true because it's just something they created. Like if they say they saw a dragon fly over their house today, all we can sit and say is, no, you didn't. Well, where's your proof that I didn't? The proof is dragons don't exist. I mean, you know, that's a good, I think, analogy of the kind of lies these people create that does become harder. And when they create them about this administration mm-hmm. and they blame him for the supply chain. People don't understand the supply chain. They don't know what it means.
Right.
If you can't explain it in 10 seconds, they're gone. And so that's a big part of the problem, too.
Sure. And just let me just add that, you know, shouldn't the burden of proof be on the people making extraordinary claims?
In the past, it used to be. Yeah,
it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be. But obviously, going back to the list of clowns that you had just mentioned, I don't see that they're fighting enough or hard enough against the disinformation. And I'm not saying like things like, oh, you should, you know, arrest them or whatever, or, you know, censor them, silence them. But, you know, fight back. I mean, as Joe Biden, I don't think Joe Biden has done enough to really publicly fight back against a lot of this stuff, a lot of what's been mainstreamed in the Republican Party. And I go back to statements made by he and other members of the Democratic Party saying things like, well, you know, going back to even to Obama, the fever will break, right? Fever did not break. In fact, it got worse and it spread throughout the entire party. And yet, you know, you have Democrats that are saying things like, well, we need a strong Republican Party. We need the Republicans to get back to reality. We need Republicans. We need a strong Republicans. And it kind of betrays their thinking, in my view, of where they feel like they need Republicans to be a check on the left, on progressives. And I think that's their biggest obstacle that I've always seen. And you could see it through Build Back Better negotiations, how quickly they were able to fold to the Manchins and the Sinemas and the Testers and the Coons and, you know, Chris Coons and all them, all these corporate Democrats fold to them because they're on the side and they want to use those moderates, so-called moderates. I don't actually don't believe they're moderate at all. And Republicans to quell the voices on the left and the left's policy prescriptions, which, by the way, are massively in line with what the American people want. You look at any of the polling on any of these policy positions, you know, child care, paid leave, et cetera, massive majorities of the country, even Republican voters as well. The very people who are being swindled by the people that are in power, you know, their elected representatives, the crazies, they support this stuff.
So it is remarkable, you know, when you see the polling on the issues and and this has been this way for years, the public goes left, like they go hard left on the issues, including
again, or what's considered hard left.
Right. You know, everywhere else, it's just normal. It's centrism is what it is. But here in America, it's considered far left. But even Republicans go that way. When you divorce it from a political party, they go even further. When you start talking about universal health care, if it's tied to a party, support for it goes down. When you just talk about what if we provided health care coverage for everybody, even Republicans say, oh, yes, I want that. I like that. But then you talk about the Democrat plan to do that. They say, well, no, absolutely no. So we have a real weird divide. And a lot of it is driven by this purely partisan team sports type nature that we have. But overall, the policies are popular. Biden is not. And these are things that he is pushing. So he, in my opinion, has to do a better job of selling this. Where did the Biden go who got so excited about the Affordable Care Act being signed, you know, that he's like, oh, it's a big deal. And he had energy. This Biden is like he's low on batteries here. And you hear him talk and come on, dude, wake the hell up.
Popping Adderall and get at him, guys.
Right. I mean, the public is used to that. Obama had charisma and energy, and he was a good speaker. Trump, horrible speaker, but he had energy. People do want that, and Biden is either just not able to do it anymore, or he has the world's worst handlers who say, no, don't get bombastic, don't be like Trump. I don't know which it is. I think it's probably a combination of both.
Probably.
But if he can't sell it, he's doomed for the next 3 years.
And going back to my, you know, what I think about that is he's got to want to sell it, you know? Yeah. And that's really my biggest criticism is it doesn't really feel like he's at all interested in the things that he ran on. And that understand that this is why his poll numbers are in the garbage. He's not fighting for the things. Again, Bernie Sanders has done a better job at fighting for the Biden agenda than even our own. And by the way, you know, this is coming from somebody who's to the left of Bernie Sanders in some issues, where I'm saying, hey, Bernie Sanders is fighting harder for the Biden agenda than Biden is, and is kind of ignoring our agenda. I mean, he's not talking, he is, you know, he'll tweet about Medicare for All and things like that, but he's been mainly focused on fighting for, you know, for example, expanding Medicare to include vision and dental, you know, two things that are very important that, again, are very incredibly popular, allowing Medicare to negotiate drug pricing, very popular things like that, that are good things. And I would love to see passed, and also fighting for the other stuff that was supposed to be in Build Back Better. And we don't see that same energy from Joe Biden. We don't see that same energy from the Democrats. In fact, what little there is in Build Back Better, which, by the way, there are good things in it, but what little is left after being stripped away, you have Democrats out there, and unfortunately some progressives even, that are saying, oh, historic. It's historic. No, it's what's historic about it is how much you've allowed it to be gutted. This started at $6 trillion, went down to 3.25, I believe, now to 1.9, now it's like 1.7. We're going to be left with a coupon for Denny's and 2 cents. Okay.
It certainly feels that way. And another thing here too, on the Republican side, is the fact that Mitch McConnell is now so confident that he announced, you know, to his party members, to the lobbyists, the donors, he said, we're not even putting out a platform for 2022. We're literally running on nothing, because nothing can beat, in Mitch McConnell's mind, and Mitch McConnell's not stupid, okay? He is an evil SOB, but he is smart, and I will give him credit for that. But he says, listen, I don't even have to come up with a platform. I don't have to do anything other than watch this party over here fight amongst itself, have this low energy president, and I'm going to win. And that tells us a lot. I mean, again, Mitch McConnell can read a room better than anybody. And if he's already saying that, you know, these Democrats are in trouble in less than a year now, less than a year. And I don't know if they can turn it around. I really, truly don't know, and honestly don't think they can.
They could if they wanted to. But going back to this, this is an issue of political will. And the reason that I say that is that Joe Biden, look, being president is a very powerful position. And he's not exercising that power. And again, going back to why we're so disappointed in him, or I should say why a lot of progressives are disappointed. I actually am not disappointed. This is about what I expected. So you come in with low expectations, you're going to, you know, you're not going to get disappointed. Because nothing will fundamentally change. He told us that, well, his donors, but we knew that from the outset. And so, you know, I'm not at all surprised. I'm not at all bummed out. I'm not at all really. It sucks that we're not going to get Build Back Better. But again, you could see it in the cards. You could see that he was not going to fight for this. And you can, of course, see that the Republicans are absolutely giddy, as well as the donor class. The donors are incredibly happy with Kyrsten Sinema, Joe Manchin, the rest of the corporate Democrats, for shooting down these very, again, popular proposals that would have actually helped regular people. And as far as the midterms that are coming, again, you said it right. Mitch McConnell is not a stupid person. Man's an evil genius. Someone like that can stay in power for so long. And if he's not running on anything, that is a really bad message. That shows that the current Democratic plan is an absolute failure. But going back to what he could actually do, as I mentioned, there's two things that he could have done. And I mentioned at the top of the show, there's another one too. Reproductive rights are under assault right now in an unprecedented way. Again, Texas with their anti-abortion laws. And now you have the Supreme Court literally hearing a case on Roe v. Wade. This is a conservative Supreme Court. Joe Biden, if he had the political will, could take a page out of, some older president's books and start stacking the courts. Pack the courts. Could do that. He doesn't have the political will. There are other things, of course, he could do. Put pressure on Joe Manchin to support his agenda. You know, hey, I hear that there are some issues with Heather Bresch, the former CEO of what was that company that made the EpiPen?
Yeah, the Mylan
Pharmaceuticals. There might be a little bit of a legal issue there. You might want to check that out, Joe Biden. Just saying, Merrick Garland, you've got your work cut out for you. Do your job. Put some pressure on. And I know, and I know it sounds like it shouldn't, you know, like, hey, oh, that's uncool. You shouldn't do stuff like that. That's dirty tricks and dirty tactics. Don't care.
Yeah.
I care about winning. I care about policy most of all. And I also care about stopping fascism, which right now the Republican Party is engaged in and the Democratic Party is enabling.
They really are. And you know, when you talk about the Supreme Court, we did have that commission, you know, that he put in place earlier this year. They finally came out and they said, all right, here's our plan. Term limits, which
term limits.
You would have to have, you know, a constitutional amendment to do. But I wholeheartedly support term limits for this court, as do obviously a majority of people in this country. But I'm also not opposed to just expand the damn court. Just do it. And the argument against it is so dumb. But then Republicans are going to do it. Cool. Then when you take power, do it again. Put 200 justices on that court. I don't care. It's a joke anyway now. If past cases are not considered the law of the land and you could just overturn them willy-nilly, then the court has lost its entire function and nothing matters anymore. Mm-hmm. So put 200 people, make it everybody in the country is a Supreme Court justice. Fantastic. We all get
the job. I'd look great in those robes.
Yeah. And we text our vote every time, you know, like we're watching American Idol. That's how we vote on Supreme Court cases, because we're all idiots anyway. And I'm sorry, just that issue is so stupid.
It is.
I simply say four justices. Why stop there? Put 40 if you want. Make them and choose people that are like 25 years old. Do it so they can sit there for 60 damn years. And it doesn't matter. Nothing matters. And sometimes, you know, you don't want to hit that cynical point, the nihilistic to hell with everything. But it's difficult. It's difficult to be immersed in this every single day.
Right.
And not every now and then succumb to that. And unfortunately, on the issue of packing or expanding the Supreme Court, that's where I've just become so cynical that nothing matters. Everything is stupid. And we should make a joke of it anyway.
Well, I mean, that's how I diffuse that is with humor. You know, every time you want to get black-pilled, you know, you just, I mean, you have to laugh at some of the absurdity that's going on in today's system and how the only argument for keeping some of these very outdated systems in place is that, well, we've just always done it this way. Yeah, but why not do something better?
Yeah.
And I think that's the argument that's always used against any social or economic progress. And we have to fight that.
So, Jeff, there's another thing I want to talk to you about real quick here. Mm-hmm. I know I've already kept you longer than I told you I would, but.
Oh, totally fine. Enjoying this.
I do have to bring this up because you are a lot like me in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
There is so much. Okay. Because we've talked about Biden. We've talked about Republicans, all that. Okay. Let's go to leftist media for a minute.
Before that. Can I just add in one more point about Biden as well? And by the way, I want to give him credit, okay? Because we've spent this whole time saying that, you know, he doesn't get any credit for being strong. One thing that I give him absolute credit for, leaving Afghanistan. I think that was one of the best decisions of his entire presidency. I will defend him to the hilt. Corporate media has been savaging him. Right-wing media savaged him. You know, they're saying all these things about, oh, not, you know, you left $87 billion worth of equipment in Afghanistan. You know, why didn't you bring it back? Well, it would have been more expensive to bring it back. Plus, the stuff's already broken down by now without material and supplies. Those things don't last very long. So I read into that. They're very difficult with the upkeep. They probably don't even have that stuff anymore. It's all broken down, except for maybe some of the small arms. But I will give them credit for that. Mainstream media, fear-mongering, war-mongering, as usual, we need to protect women's rights. Well, again, as I mentioned with the Supreme Court, we can't even protect women's rights here in Texas. Or any other place in the United States, you're in Florida, it's probably something similar is coming your way. And so that's a ridiculous argument. And again, to go to the point where people are blaming Biden for things that are not his fault, gas prices. The thing that irritates me the most is when people talk about gas prices, gas prices, gas prices. Thanks, Biden. You know, it's a continuation of thanks, Obama. And it's ridiculous. The president does not control gas prices. You can go all the way back to George W. Bush when he said, oh, I wish I had a magic wand and a low gas, I don't have it, though. I don't have that magic wand. Well, Joe Biden doesn't have a magic wand either. Donald Trump didn't have a magic wand. In fact, gas prices were still pretty expensive under Donald Trump. Again, a result of COVID, but also you have OPEC plus, you have the fact that we don't actually have domestic energy. That is a complete fabrication. That's not a real concept, domestic American energy. It frustrates me when I see people peddle that, because it's not real. It's pumped out of the ground here by multinational corporations, sent to refineries in Texas, again, owned by multinational corporations, sold on the global market, bought, and then we buy it back, or we buy it from somewhere else, from another global, you know, multinational corporation, and then gas stations and companies get to put whatever price they want on it. And guess what? They have made billions and billions of dollars of essentially what is price gouging and calling it inflation. That is not Joe Biden's fault. I don't think there's a whole lot he can do about it other than make a gigantic investment in renewable energies, which, again, there's been some modest investment. I think there needs to be more. I think they need to get really, really serious about climate change and stop opening up drilling permits in the Gulf and doing things like that. But again, the whole idea that you can pin squarely gas prices on the president, it doesn't matter what president it is, it's just complete and utter garbage, total fabrication, complete lies, gaslighting, whatever you want to call it. It's BS. And I'm sorry, I'm trying to fight the urge to swear.
No, it's look, I agree with everything you said right there. Those are definitely good points to bring up. So again, I do want to shift for a moment, because like I said,
sure,
leftist media, there's not a ton of us out there doing this. We need more voices out there, but this whole year, and even way longer than that, to be perfectly honest, there's been a lot of fights. There's been a lot of back and forth. You know, this person, I'm pissed at this person. And a lot of it has to do with, we've got plenty of people that are allegedly on the left that have gone so far left that they're clearly on the right at this point. But I will say, and I wanted to applaud you for this, you've done a wonderful job of not getting just sucked in to so much of this drama. I mean, I do, you know, I see you respond to things on social media, and I do as well sometimes, but for the most part, is it helpful to get involved in these fights? Or, because I'm of the mind, and I avoid it. Look, I despise a lot of those people. They would never know it because I don't say it, but I, to me, it's like, ignore them. I blocked Glenn Greenwald on Twitter over a year ago. And it was wonderful. And it's not because he's harassing me. It's because I'm tired of seeing his bull crap. I'm blocking him. We've never interacted, and I'm blocking him because I'm tired of other people retweeting it onto my damn feed. He's a loon now, a right wing hack, clearly. And so to me, it's always just been, you know what? Screw it. Ignore it. Block him. Move on. Don't get dragged down to their level. But some people do it really well. So I'm not, you know, attacking the folks who do get involved, but I do want to say, I like that you're kind of like me as well with that regard. Like, we could get in there and just start shit with everybody we want, but at the end of the day, what's the point? Really, kind of, what's the point?
I mean, you know, I don't like getting involved because I don't care. I'm here to give my opinion. I'm here to do the news. I'm not here to start, you know, fights with other people, with other creators. I could care less for the most part what they do. I have been a little bit concerned though with the anti-vax stuff that I've been seeing from certain people. I'm not comfortable with that because, I mean, if you go back to the earliest videos on my channel, it's me crapping on anti-vaxxers. So this is not a position that is new for me. I've always held contempt for people who despise science or who don't care about actual science. And so I've also noticed as well for a long time that the left has always had a bit of a, and I'm not saying like the entire left, as some small portion of the left does have some anti-vax tendencies. And I do understand where some of that comes from. You and I, we know, like y'all know, we're not the biggest fans of Big Pharma. Okay. The pharmaceutical industry is an industry driven by greed. We can all agree with that. That doesn't dispute the science though. It doesn't dispute the science behind COVID vaccines or any of the other medication. The problem with Big Pharma has always been its business practices and its lobbying practices. It's always been the fact that there is greed. I think we should nationalize the pharmaceutical industry. I don't think there should be a profit motive in healthcare whatsoever. That would solve that problem. So then you couldn't say, that would deflate a lot of the anti-vax rhetoric that we see on the left is, oh, well, now Big Pharma, there's no profit motive. Oh, okay. So when the science is sound, great. Vaccines, good. You know, there's that. And that's my big problem. But generally, as I said, I'm not getting anything done if I'm fighting with other people. You know what I'm saying? I'm here to fight fascism. I'm here to stop the right wing. I'm here to do, to promote good policy positions. It doesn't matter where they come from. You know, if a right winger comes up with a good policy position, great. I'm in favor. Let's do it. Right. If, you know, if it comes from the centrists, I'll be in favor. Tim Ryan, for example, floated the $2,000 monthly, what is it, stimulus check during coronavirus. I thought that was a great idea. Tim Ryan's a centrist. He's a center, you know, centrist Democrat. Doesn't matter. If you come up with a good idea, I'm going to support a good idea. But if you say you're in my side and you come up with terrible ideas, well, then I'm going to attack the ideas. I'm not going to attack the messenger. I'm going to attack the ideas. Because really, all you're doing when attacking the messenger is galvanizing the fans, the fan base. Because let's be honest, we've been in this career for quite some time. And we know that we get a little bit of a parasocial relationship with our fans, with our followers. People tune into us. They see us every day. They identify with us. They trust us. And that's a wonderful, beautiful thing, that knowing that there are so many people out there that get the trust in the things that we say. It should make us more galvanized to do better, to honor that trust by giving them good information, fact-based information, and good perspectives, fair perspectives, but also a perspective that we share in progressive politics. There are people, I think, that are abusing that trust. And, you know, when you fight, when you have two of these creators fight, their fans often get involved and start sending kind of the worst kind of messages. I've gotten them before. Even if I haven't interacted with certain people, certain creators, I've still received some of those messages from followers of said person or people or groups or whatever. And it's just like, I ain't got time for this. At the end of the day, I don't have time for it. I got a job to do. I've got people to inform, and let's, you know, leave the petty infighting for someone else. and by the way, not everybody, and let me just, you know, address, because I have friends that have been attacked by this. Okay. By certain people, certain groups that you were talking about. And these attacks are vicious. And I am in no way calling the people defending themselves against these attacks petty. Right. And that's, I think that's an important distinction to point out. Defending yourself is fine, but willingly injecting yourself or starting drama. And I think there's a reason for that. Of course, clicks and views, et cetera, because drama is very, very popular on all social media, video platforms, et cetera. I mean, if, like you and I, if we started drama with somebody or with each other, you know, imagine that, right? Or just stage like a drama, like, oh, Farron, you bald son of a bee. Oh, wait, that wouldn't work. But if you did, clicks and views. And so there's a financial incentive. And that's just the nature of capitalism, I think.
It is. And look, I don't want to say that all the blame lies on one side, but when you talk about, you know, starting the drama, mm-hmm. we all see mm-hmm. who does it. So it's,
there are certain people who are attracted to drama. That's for sure.
So anyway, I had to get your take on that because again, you know, you're a lot like me and it's like, you know what, just shut the hell up. Like we've got so many problems facing this country, facing our lives that I don't care what he said about, screw it. Like go away. Or DM each other and work it out. You know, the few people I've ever had, you know, some kind of disagreement with, we worked it out privately in DMs and now everything's cool and has been for years. So, you know, you could do that or you can get the clicks. And I think we all know what most people are choosing.
Right. And there is one thing to say too about being responsible with your platform. If you do have a lot of people, I think you do have a responsibility to be a responsible person and put out a fact-based message. And, you know, if you're not doing that, I think it is fair to criticize that, you know, and certain financial motives. But beyond that, I mean, just to start drama. I mean, you know, again, I'm never in favor of that. I'll avoid it. And you're right. If you do have criticisms, you could first work it out on DMs first. And that's what I mean by kind of calling out the drama. And then if, you know, if it persists, then you might want to do maybe something to point it out and say, look, this is what's going on. I told that person that this is an issue and that you're, you know, being very irresponsible with the platform that you have. And they didn't listen. And so now here's the call out.
Yeah. And look, I am okay with that too. And we've seen that, you know, Anna with TYT has had to do that so much this year, completely unfair, because you've got that whole gaggle of folks that have ganged up on her and it's so horrible. But listen, I will leave it at that. Jeff, tell everybody where they can find you.
Well, you can go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/WaldorfNation. We put out videos every day. So check those out. We get a live show at 4 p.m. Eastern. So tune into that. Yes, we do it live. we're also on Facebook at Jeff Waldorf Show and Twitch. If you're all interested in Twitch, checking out that community there. Very small, very tight-knit community, very nice people. twitch.tv/Jeff Waldorf. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff's Politics as well. That's it. That's how you can find me.
Jeff, wonderful conversation today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you so much, Farron. I enjoyed it immensely. Let's absolutely do this again. A lot of fun.
So, Mike, it's an election year now, officially in 2022. Big one coming up, obviously. And all signs are already pointing towards Republicans at least taking back the House. And some of that is due mainly to gerrymandering. Some of it is just due to general redistricting that's not even, you know, hyper-partisan, but also just historically, the party in power tends to lose the House. I think it's only not happened like 3 times in history. So even just based on that part, Republicans are probably taking over. But I wanted to get your take on this because this is a big election year and there's a lot of things that could be done that aren't being done. And so where do you think, suppose we hold the election today, where does this land at this moment?
I think it would probably be a bloodbath for Democrats. I would expect them to lose the House, possibly even the Senate as well. And that's even if the conditions were fair, like taking out voter suppression, taking out gerrymandering. I think that the Democratic Party, they just haven't done enough to meet the moment. And part of me, this is a really cynical approach, so you know, brace yourself. I think that a lot of Democrats are comfortable knowing that they will lose because then all of the pressure kind of just goes away. There's this expectation currently that they have to deliver because they do hold all branches of government minus the Supreme Court. So if you take that pressure away and they have a really solid excuse in, well, Republicans control the House, then their base kind of accepts that excuse. Because, I mean, obviously, we know that Republicans aren't going to go along with anything. They're going to obstruct everything. But currently, as it stands now, you know, when they actually can pass legislation, there's a lot of pressure. It's hard to keep scapegoating Manchin and Sinema, and they should be scapegoated. They are absolutely in the way of progress. But there's a lot more that can be done that isn't being done. I mean, we haven't really seen Joe Biden exert pressure on Manchin and Sinema in any meaningful way whatsoever. As president, you have your bully pulpit, so you can't just accept that these two no votes are going to obstruct your entire agenda. You have to push them. You have to fight. You have to go in the media, make your case, go to their home states if need be. But I just haven't seen that from Joe Biden. And if he actually fought and he tried everything he could and still Manchin and Sinema are no votes, then you take action via executive order to do everything you can to make a difference before the midterms. I mean, if I were Joe Biden currently and I actually cared, so this would be a different version of Joe Biden in an alternate universe, I'd be using my pen to cancel student debts. I would be doing everything in my power to make sure that people had additional survival checks. I would be trying to fight with everything that I have to expand the child tax credit for another year. I mean, it should be permanent, but just do everything in your power. And we just haven't seen that from him. And now I think that he kind of sees that the writing is on the wall, hence his speech in Georgia. But I have my critiques of that, and I'm sure we'll get into that as well. But right now, it's not looking good for Democrats. And I think a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them are okay with that. I think they're happy about that. Because think about, if you're a Democrat and you don't really want to take action, you don't want to offend your donors, it's easier for you to fundraise off of Republicans obstructing bills that you have that you really want to have a vote on. It's easier to fundraise off of Republicans doing bad things. But it's harder to fundraise. It's harder to convince your base that you're fighting for them if you're in control and you're not doing anything.
Well, you know, there's two big strikes coming up against the Democrats right now. Obviously, as you pointed out, actually, you pointed both of them out. The child tax credit, those payments, those are over with for now. So you just, in an election year, took money out of the pockets of the voters. And then coming up in May, when those student loan repayments start, unless a miracle happens, you're taking more money out of the pockets of American voters in an election year. So even if we were just looking, like, if I'm an advisor, a political strategist, and I'm not thinking about the human aspect of any of that, just the optics in an election year, I'm telling this man, listen, you are taking this money away from people. They're going to the polls in just a couple months, and you're sending them there poorer than they were to start this year. That doesn't look good for you politically. So again, that's totally removing the human aspect, the economic aspects of any of that. From a pure political standpoint, that almost feels like suicide, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's political malpractice. It honestly defies logic. It's insane to me. Because, you know, Democrats were rightfully bragging about the effect that the child tax credit had. They were saying it cut childhood poverty in the United States in half. They were correct about that. But now you can't say that because it's gone. So what do you say to voters? Well, I gave you $1,400 checks after promising $2,000 checks way back at the beginning of my administration. I mean, they're going to forget and they're going to feel the differences, the impact on their wallet. I can no longer just assume that the Democratic Party is corrupt and that's why they don't do things that would benefit the American people because they're serving their donors. But it also is just complete incompetence as well. And it's frustrating because there are things that they can do to make our lives better. I mean, currently we're in the third wave of COVID and there has been zero discussion about survival checks. Where are our N95 masks? I mean, it's just there's little things that they can do that they can brag about that they won't do. So I don't know going into the midterms. I don't know what they brag about. If you're a Democrat, what do you say to the American people? Sure, you can say $1,400 checks. But then the question automatically by people are going to be, hey, why aren't we getting another round of $1,400 checks? So the things that they can brag about, it kind of leads to more questions in the minds of average voters because those checks really helped. So I don't know what they're doing. And I don't think that they know what they're doing as well.
Well, and it's not, you know, people also wonder, you know, where's another round of stimulus? First of all, where's the rest of our stimulus from last year? But right. Also, you're shoving us back into work. We have seen such a ridiculous shift coming from the CDC, you know, Fauci himself as well saying, oh, no, everybody, you're okay. You go back to work. They're literally bowing to this corporate pressure after these CEOs came and talked to them in Congress a couple weeks ago And they said, okay, look, quarantine from 10 days. Now you got 5 days. Oh, no, no, no. You're totally safe to go back to work. You're fine. Everybody needs to do this. And they're shoving us back into these situations and getting annoyed when we have teachers walking out of their Petri dish classrooms. So they've done a 180. The agencies overseeing this have done a 180. And what do we get? Okay, well, we get, maybe we're going to mail you masks. We're trying to figure this out. Okay, maybe if you have insurance, go buy a COVID test, which you can't find anywhere. And then you're probably going to have to go through this ridiculously lengthy process of filing with your insurance to get a reimbursement. And God only knows how long that is going to take if you can actually do that. So there's just so many missteps that are not even accidental. I mean, this is intentional what they're doing, shoving people back out there as Omicron is just going insane at the moment.
Yeah. And it shows a fundamental misunderstanding of what people are dealing with, because assuming that they have insurance, many Americans still do not. Like my mom, for example, if she needs to buy a COVID test, she doesn't have the $20 right now to get reimbursed. So that's the issue, is they still kind of show that they don't understand. And one thing that is just honestly mind-boggling to me is the fact that they have essentially given up on COVID. They're just letting it run its course throughout the country. And this is the Trump strategy. Now, I would argue that Trump lost largely because of the way that he mishandled COVID. Now, Biden still hasn't mishandled it to that extent, but just not letting or not doing anything about COVID is already proven to be a political killer. Like, it's not good for your political career, but that's what they're doing because they've bowed to their corporate overlords, as you've stated. So I don't think that they realize that this has the potential to backfire horribly. I mean, with the CDC cutting down from 10 days to 5 days to appease the Delta CEO, don't they realize that, okay, you're technically getting people back to work quicker since they're not quarantining for as long. But if you're exposing more people, then that means even more outages. So you could exacerbate the problem even further. And it's just, I don't know. It feels like we're living in the Twilight Zone, because you would expect at least some level of competence somewhere in DC, somewhere. And you see nothing. You see no leadership. You see that essentially you're on your own, when it comes to COVID-19. May the odds ever be in your favor. You know, it's the Shrek meme. Some of you may die, but that's a price I'm willing to pay, from Lord Farquaad. I think I'm butchering the quote, but you know what I mean? It's insanity. It's insanity, Farron.
And, another part of this, if we're talking in terms of the midterms here too, even with all of this COVID, the number one concern, according to polls out this week for voters, is the economy. Unemployment, inflation, we got the reports this week, 7% in December. And, a lot of that obviously is due to just the corporate price gouging, but that narrative of the corporate price gouging is not being told, obviously, by the corporate media, because it's the same people that actually own all the shares of these media companies. And so, of course, all of that does get laid down at Biden's feet. Now, the Fed, could they step in and do some things? Yes, you're talking very complicated monetary policy, even things that I don't quite understand, but they can do a little bit. But a lot of this is corporate. But at the end of the day, people do end up blaming the president in power for that. So that's something that's also going to weigh heavily on Biden, whether it's fair or not to do it. He's president. That's bad. It falls on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As much as I hate Donald Trump, tactically, I think he was right to push back against some of the corporate-based narratives. And most of the things that he pushed back on were delusional, obviously. But I mean, I guess what I'm looking for with Democrats is some sign of life, rather than absorbing every single blow. Maybe try to dodge it. Maybe try to push back and say, no, this is why things are the way that they are. Corporate price gouging is an issue. I'm going to push back against that. Here's what my administration is going to do to take measures against these corporations that are gouging customers. But we don't see that. We see no pushback. Every single right-wing narrative that's disseminated it goes unchecked until months and months, until it becomes a monster. Critical race theory, you know, cancel culture. So there's no fight. There's no unified message from the Democratic Party. It just feels like there's no real leadership. And the best that we get from Democratic Party consultants is pushing for Hillary Clinton in 2024 so we could have a real leader. I don't understand how things continue this way without the party, just at least some members of the party, you know, aside from the squad and whatnot, thinking maybe we're going in the wrong direction. Maybe it's not voters failing us. Maybe it's us failing to actually deliver. But again, it goes back to the cynicism that I feel, in that I really believe that some Democrats would prefer to just lose, because this is too much pressure, right? You're trying to balance your corporate donors' interests and the interests of voters. And it's hard to prove that you care about voters when you have an opportunity now to deliver for them, but you're not. So it's easier to just not have power.
Right. And that is a good point, too, because if Republicans take back the House, and I know they're confident they can maybe take back the Senate, but that's a much longer shot. They have, you know, almost twice as many seats to defend as Democrats. They've got some people retiring, which costs more money. So taking back the Senate, that's more difficult for them, even though it's a 50-50 split. The House is exceptionally likely to happen. And so, yeah, that does give them this clearance for the next 2 years as they're running for president again to say, listen, I want to do all these great things, but dang it, I've got this Republican Party over here that won't let me do it. So if you vote them out and, of course, vote for me again, then we'll have Democratic control and everything will be great and rosy. And unfortunately, a lot of people will be like, yeah, that sounds right. Democrats just had control of the chambers and the White House. We can totally get stuff done. It's Lucy moving the football from Charlie Brown at this point.
Right.
But the public believes it, though. They think, oh, well, yeah, we would have these nice things if those pesky Republicans were just out of the way. But you're not going to give them a big enough advantage to overcome your Manchins and your Sinemas for that to ever actually happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really unfortunate that this is the way that it always plays out. You know, I think that the Democratic Party and their base should just expect to lose in 2022. And if they don't lose the House, then great. But use this small window of opportunity to get done what they need to do to at least at a minimum protect democracy. If you're not going to deliver for voters, then at least make sure that Republicans can't just outright steal elections in the future at the behest of Donald Trump. And they're not taking this threat seriously when it comes to voting rights. They aren't putting enough pressure on Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. And in theory, you think that they have at least a little bit of leverage against the Manchins and the Sinemas of the world because they pay lip service to the idea of voting rights. So, I mean, who knows if you can get Manchin on board, but use his words against him. And you see no fight. And it's shocking to me that they aren't taking this threat seriously. What GOP controlled states across the country are doing, not just voter suppression, but trying to strip power away from local election officials. So in the event there is another Trump loss or a future Republican loss, they can effectively steal the election. It's inconceivable to me that this isn't a hair on fire moment, because they should be fighting to stop that. And they're not. I mean, we see a little bit of initiative from Joe Biden with him campaigning for voting rights at ground zero of voter suppression in Georgia. But I even have my issues with that strategy as well, which we can get into later.
Well, yeah. Well, actually, you know what? Let's kind of move into that, because we have to look at it this way. Let's suppose for the last 12 months, Democrats did everything right. Okay. We got our good infrastructure bill. We got our stimulus, we got COVID under control, and we got Build Back Better. Democrats would still be at a disadvantage because of all of these voter suppression bills that have been passed in the last 12 months. Georgia, Florida, Texas, a handful of other states trying to get this done right now. And then we're stuck on, you know, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. We still can't get that. And even before Biden's speech this week, Manchin said, not changing the rules. And Biden gave a good speech. But even some of the most diehard Democrats out there, like Dr. Jason Johnson, even came out and said, no, this is weak sauce, man. This is pathetic. Those weren't his exact words. I'm just kind of paraphrasing. So if you can't even convince the diehards that you're serious about it, then, you know, what chance do you have of changing the mind of a Manchin or a Sinema on this issue?
Yeah, it's a critical failure. Unfortunately, Dr. Jason Johnson blocked me, but I saw the screenshot and I think he said something to the effect of he didn't hear a plan from Biden. And I agree with him. There's no plan. And part of the problem is if you're going to campaign in Georgia, I guess I just don't understand what the value in that is, because the two senators from Georgia, Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, they're on board. They support voting rights legislation. They're not the hurdles. You need to be in West Virginia. You need to be in Arizona. Put pressure on Joe Manchin. Let his constituents know how he's failing them. So even when they try to fight, you know, I mean, I guess that it's inherently good that there's some desire to go anywhere other than DC and fight, but it's still a wrong strategy. And you just don't really see Joe Biden doing what he needs to do, which is naming, shaming Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Like, we are witnessing an attack on democracy that we haven't seen in quite some time. And so you need to treat it as serious as it is and call them out every step of the way. As the president, you can control media narratives. All you have to do is say Manchin and Sinema are anti-democracy. And you don't have to say that. Like, that's just an example. You have to say they're siding with Republicans. They're pro-Trump. Say something. Fight. Put that out there so they have more pressure on them. And it's not just, you know, a minimal amount of pressure where they have media teams following them around and they get press. No, actually exert real political pressure on them. And I've seen some people float, Kyle Kulinski, David Dole, that maybe, you know, Joe Biden should use his AG to threaten Joe Manchin. You know, there's a lot of corruption going on. Rolling Stone just released an article about how corrupt Joe Manchin is. And the article is long, but just astonishing. The Manchin family is very corrupt. So use your power to investigate them. I mean, I don't know if that's legally dubious or not, but I want to see something. And what we saw is something, sure, but it's not going to work. Campaigning for voting rights in Georgia isn't going to do anything. You need Manchin and Sinema. Just crack some skulls, metaphorically speaking, of course. It's just, I'm so tired. I'm exhausted watching them fumble around, because it shouldn't be this hard. And again, even if you fail at the end, at least I know you did everything that you can. But I can't say that about Joe Biden and Democrats currently in power. I don't think they're doing everything that they can. They're not treating this attack on democracy as the emergency that it is. And, you know, once you go beyond this point, once you pass 2022, assuming Democrats lose power, how are you going to fix democracy? There's no going back. And you already have a huge portion of the population embrace authoritarian measures against democracy, believe in Trump's big lie. It's so hard to undo that. It's so hard to put the cat back in the bag. So you have to protect democracy. And we're at this point where the GOP is just explicitly anti-democracy. And they've even conditioned their base to reject democracy and even become open to the idea of an illiberal regime, which is just shocking to me. And it's an emergency, but they're not treating it like that.
Well, no. And the Republican Party is so confident in victory this year that they already said, we're not putting out a platform. We're literally not even going to run on a unified platform of actual issues, because we don't need to. Like, we don't even have to put out a plan for what we want to do, and we can still win. That is how weak this administration has been, to already be losing to a group who stands for nothing except for stupid culture war BS issues that really don't affect anybody's lives, except, of course, the people that they're trying to oppress. But it's absolutely nuts that we're living through this kind of era right now, where the Democratic Party is so dysfunctional that they can't beat, you know, the party of the Capitol rioters, the party of the big lie, the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene, who says, let's use the Second Amendment against Democrats. I mean, you're losing to that. There's no excuse. There's no excuse. Democrats should be slaughtering Republicans in the polls, and they're struggling to, you know, even get close to being at that level. It blows my mind the level of incompetence we see from them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think that the Republicans are correct. They don't have to do anything, and they don't. I can't remember the last time Republicans have talked about any policies, even tax policies. All they talk about now is culture war issues. As you said, critical race theory, just things that don't actually matter. And the reason why they don't have to do anything is because they have a base that will consistently vote for them every single election cycle. Democrats have a base that is much more dynamic. So, you know, Democrats, they win by simply getting more people out to the polls. But in order to do that, you have to engage with voters. You have to deliver on policies. I mean, imagine the difference it would make if Joe Biden canceled all student debt. Immediately, you'd have an entire generation of millennials and Gen Zers all galvanized. They'd come out and vote for Democrats, anticipating more policy. I mean, who knows? Maybe that wouldn't be the election winner, but would it improve their chances? Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, who you choose to or whether or not you come out and vote, it's going to depend on if you feel like the people in power are making a difference in your lives, and canceling student debt would make a huge difference. But if nothing meaningful has been accomplished, then you're going to think, am I really going to spend 2 hours waiting in line to vote for Democrats if they're not going to deliver? I mean, no. So they have to excite their base.
They do. And it does come down to, you know, are you better off than you were, you know, 4 years ago, or I guess in this case, 2 years ago? And the public's not going to be able to say yes when November rolls around, you know, assuming things stay on this constant track that we're on right now, which I don't see them deviating off of this. But if they're still struggling, you know, under the burden of student loan debt, no, we're not better off. We were better off when we had it forgiven or, you know, delayed for 2 years, which for the record actually helped the economy, didn't hurt it, like, you know, all these people say it would do. No, we haven't made payments in 2 years, but we're told every day the economy's kicking ass. You know, that doesn't make sense. You know, those two things can't go together, but it's going to hurt them if they don't deliver. But there's still a limit on how much help delivering would do, but obviously it would be a big benefit whether it lets them keep the house or not. You know, that's a question we're not going to get answered, because I don't see this administration doing enough to actually give the deliverables to the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I think that what we're going to see is they won't do anything, even though they've had a lot of warnings. Bernie Sanders, in an interview with The Guardian, warned them. You know, he talked about how you have to course correct now before it's too late. And, you know, they won't do anything, and then they'll lose. And then inevitably, we know what will be the discourse. It'll be they went too far left. They listened too much to AOC. And it's so predictable. You know, history repeats itself, they say, but I didn't know that history can repeat itself like every 2 years or every 4 years. It's maddening to me. And it honestly feels like we're living in Groundhog's Day or the Twilight Zone. It's our politics is so stupid right now. And so I don't even know I don't know what the right word is for it. It's so unstable that I feel like somebody has to step up and be the voice of reason. But then whenever that happens, whenever you get a Bernie Sanders, you know, it people freak out and they think, okay, no, I'm focused on electability this time, even though I agree with him. So we have to go with Joe Biden because he's the moderate. And then it's like, oh, okay, no, Joe Biden isn't moderate enough. He's kowtowing to the left. We have to go with Hillary, referencing the Wall Street Journal op-ed. I feel so frustrated.
Well, you know, I want to switch gears, you know, for this last little part here real quick. And I'm going to preface it with this. Obviously, last week, you know, Ted Cruz had his oopsie daisy moment where he had to go groveling to Tucker Carlson. But Cruz admitted something during his segment with Tucker after Tucker attacked him the night before. He said, "Tucker, I texted you after your show." And then, of course, we're finding out from the January 6th committee all of this information about Donald Trump and his people at Fox News would call him up, bring him into cabinet meetings via phone. And it reminded me of back in, I believe it was 06, when George W. Bush brought in, I think it was about 8 conservative talk show hosts into the Oval Office, had a strategy meeting with them, talked policy, talked the way forward. And all of that together, I bring all that up because That doesn't exist on the left in any way at all. There's no coordination. And I'm not saying we want to be colluding with the Democrats, but, right. You know, I mean, because we'll get, you know, killed for that. But it is interesting that there is such cohesion between conservative politicians and conservative media. They work hand in hand. But meanwhile, you know, what we do, you and I and everybody else doing this, we get shut out of the game. They don't want to talk mm-hmm. to us. They don't want to waste their time. I'm not going on a podcast, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, all of them are like that, but they'll go on MSNBC every now and then. But I guarantee you they're not texting Rachel Maddow every night asking what we need to do about the border. So I do think that if Democrats want to win, they're going to have to play that Republican game, and they're going to have to start reaching out to some of these, you know, leftist people with these massive platforms. But I don't see them doing that. Do you?
No, I think that they're really stuck in this old school mentality, not just when it comes to new media, but also when it comes to politics in general. I mean, the fact that we're still talking about Bill Clinton-esque triangulation and how that's a feasible strategy in 2022, it just shows that they're not capable of adapting. They absolutely are terrible at messaging. And we all have these ginormous audiences for a reason. We have people engaged. So maybe if they came on our shows, and even if, you know, I would obviously, if I spoke with, you know, somebody from the Democratic Party establishment, I would have to push back hard. But just engaging with us is important. And, you know, I caught that too when Ted Cruz talked about how he was texting Tucker Carlson and how, you know, I thought to myself, I didn't bring this up when I did this, the segment on it, but I thought, man, they're just openly admitting that they are colluding with members of the media. I mean, isn't that kind of controversial? I remember back in 2016 when articles from The Intercept came out about how Hillary Clinton had campaign surrogates. Yeah, I don't know why that slipped my mind. She had campaign surrogates and they didn't disclose that they were on the Clinton Foundation payroll. That was a huge scandal, and rightfully so, because, you know, you want to make sure that people on the media are unbiased and impartial. But on Fox News, they're not even pretending as if they're not the de facto propaganda arm of the Republican Party. So, I mean, I don't think that we need a mirror image of that on the Democratic Party side. But what Democrats need to do is get more savvy. Their idea of going on a podcast is going on Pod Save America. Okay. Who listens to that who's under 50 years old? I don't think anyone, like you, and sure, it's a step in the right direction, right? But they go there, they go on Bill Maher, and that's as much as they'll do in terms of alternative media. But they don't know what venues exist that allow them to communicate with real people and not just loyalists to them. I think that if they actually spoke with people who would challenge them, but on the left, not like on the right, but people like myself or you spoke with, you know, us, maybe they'd have additional insight. Perhaps they disagree with everything that we said. But just the fact that they're thinking outside the box and they're not just getting that brain rot fed to them that's in DC from consultants in their ear, it could make a difference. But again, who knows with Democrats, because, you know, they're incompetent and corrupt at this point, is a distinction without a difference. I just wish that they would do something to, I don't know, stop us from free falling as a country.
And, you know, not to sit here and just say Bernie Sanders is the greatest person ever, but back when Ring of Fire used to be a nationwide radio show, you know, we would get politicians on fairly regularly, but Bernie Sanders was one of the few people who pretty much, no matter when we asked him, you know, what we wanted him to talk, yeah, sure, I'll come on. Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. I'll be there. Almost without fail. I mean, it got to the point where it's like, oh crap, we need another guest. All right, I'll just reach out to Bernie. And he would do it and he'd be great every time. So many other politicians wouldn't do that. I've seen this now for going on 18 years, and the ones who would come on regularly, Bernie Sanders, you know, Sheldon Whitehouse was always very responsive. But beyond that, we'd have to get, you know, no offense to them, but some, you know, House member from, you know, a rural part of Indiana that nobody's ever heard of. And that was it. You know, the bigger folks didn't want to waste time with it. And we do still see that today. And as you pointed out, it's not just about, hey, let's collude together. It's no, listen to what we have to say. you know, we don't necessarily want to hear from you. We want you to hear from us. And mm-hmm. that would be really the difference between the progressive media doing this and what the conservative media does. Conservative media gives out the marching orders. We just want to be able to let these politicians on the left hear this different perspective that, again, as you said, they're not getting in that DC bubble at all.
You know, part of the problem, too, is that we oftentimes will say things that are going to conflict with what their donors want. You know, when we talk about climate change and, you know, I talk about just shutting down coal plants right now so we can save the planet, that's not something that is politically expedient for them. In fact, if they hear me say that on my show and they don't push back, you know, perhaps that's a political liability. So, you know, they're a little bit too risk averse. They are worried about, you know, if we're a little bit too edgy, like a Hassan Piker, for example, yeah. You know, maybe that's bad. But, you know, Republicans, they have, I mean, every single Republican will go on Steve Bannon's show, or not every single Republican, but a lot of them, they'll go on Steve Bannon's show, who's a white supremacist, who's literally anti-Semitic, and nobody really bats an eye. So I think that they need to just stop playing it safe, take some chances, and sure, maybe the things that we say, they just disagree with them. They agree with the political consultants who they pay millions of dollars to that lead to them losing every single time. Maybe they agree more with them. But I think that everyone can agree that what they're doing currently is not working. This iteration of the Democratic Party has been an unmitigated failure. And so perhaps we don't have the best answers, but we have a different perspective and we're normal people. We don't live in mansions. We broadcast from our home studios in many instances. We're normal people. And at least let us challenge you. At least don't be afraid to engage with us. But they are. They pretend as if we don't exist. And then they complain when the right wing messaging, you know, just is overwhelming. Well, because you don't have, you know, an appropriate left wing machine to push back against it. We are, I think, a lot more effective at messaging and pushing back on right wing propaganda. It's basically all that we do on yeah. my Twitch streams. That's all we talk about is the dumb things that Republicans are saying. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe listen to us if you want to win, but that's assuming they do want to win, because, again, it goes back to my cynicism. I don't think a lot of them want to win. I think they're there for a paycheck. They're there to keep that seat warm as long as they possibly can, and then they'll get a gig as a lobbyist when they're out. So it's kind of like a lose-lose situation regardless, because I don't think we're operating with good faith actors who genuinely care about the country, which is a problem.
It is. And you know, just one more point to make on this. I do think there is a reason, and I know you know this because you were awesome with it in 2020 and beyond that. The people running for office, they reach out to us. They mm-hmm. want to talk to our audiences. They want to get their message out. And it is 99% of the time the people who say, I'm not taking the corporate money. I'm not, you know, employing any lobbyists. I'm an actual independent person with progressive ideals running a non-corporate campaign. Those people do reach out. Because they understand mm-hmm. the value of what we do. And of course, this year, you know, I'm hoping to bring on as many as possible here on Ring of Fire. So if you're out there, you're listening, you're watching, hit me up on Twitter. I'm more than willing to do it. And Mike, I'm sure you're probably the same way, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I will oftentimes I'll outsource my candidate fielding to people on Twitter. I'll say, hey, who's running? That's good that you want to come on the show. Because there is so many candidates who are running and we need more Cori Bushes in Congress. You're not going to agree with everything that they do, but the difference between them and your typical Democrat is that these are normal people who actually care about issues. They come in with a real agenda and they have the desire to fight. I mean, Cori Bush, different Cori, was a Black Lives Matter activist. She was on the streets in Ferguson, and you see the difference that that makes, right? I mean, she was sleeping on the Capitol steps for 3 nights, and she got Joe Biden to extend the moratorium on evictions, specifically just by putting pressure on him. So we need more people like that, real people who actually engage with other real people and not individuals that just kind of get elected and then they go in their ivory tower, place themselves in a bubble, surround themselves by yes men and women, and they never talk to anyone else again. Because even if you go into Congress, you know, with the best intentions, and I would argue that Nancy Pelosi probably went in with the best intentions, eventually you will be corrupted. You'll succumb to DC brain. And that's not good. So it's a constant fight against all of the interests, all of the people in your ear lobbying you, pressuring you, and you have to get out of that bubble. And, you know, I would argue that people in DC just don't do that enough, which is why I'm fighting like hell to get as many progressives elected as possible. And it's difficult. Sometimes you have to run more than once. But this time, there's actually quite a bit of people that have a chance of winning. I mean, Donna Imam is one of them in Texas who came really close. And if she were to get elected, she'd be a Texan member of Congress who supports Medicare for all. And this is someone who's sharp. She's an engineer and she knows how to fight for it. She knows how to market it to conservative audiences, Medicare for all, for example. So we need real people like that in Congress.
All right. So, Mike, tell everybody where they can find you, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, whatever you've got. This is your chance. Go ahead and lay it all out for everybody.
All right, folks. Well, you can see me every day on YouTube, the Humanist Report channel. You can see me on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. PST over at twitch.tv/Humanist Report, where we just kind of talk smack about Republicans, some lefty LARPers, I call them, you know, who pretend to be leftists in independent media. And we just have a good time. You can also find me on Twitter at Humanist Report, but I discourage people from following me because my Twitter activity is probably not admirable. So I tend to tell people to not go there because I should post too much. But yeah.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for talking with me. This is great. And, you know, this is another thing in addition to the candidates. I really want to make these network connections with all the other, you know, leftists who are doing this. And it's always wonderful to talk to you. And again, for the record, I appeared on your show. It was Dylan Burns and then Mac. I don't know his last name, but Good Politic Guy is his channel and his Twitter handle. My God, that was the most fun I've ever had in an interview, anything I've ever done. So that was wonderful. That was Dystopian Times. Mm-hmm. And so everybody, is that on your YouTube channel? Can they find that on there?
Yeah, it's on YouTube channel. The old episodes will be archived for Patreon members. But I am going to be doing a season 2 of Dystopian Times over the summer, most likely. I'll switch up the format a little bit and do maybe more one-on-one, more in-depth interviews. But yeah, Dystopian Times, that's a kind of a spinoff of the Humanist Report that I'm doing.
Well, it was a ton of fun. So, Mike, thank you for all your work. Keep it up. Beat those YouTube algorithms because I know we're all getting hammered with it right now. So thanks again, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate the invite. Very fun talking to you, Farron.
And that's it for the best of Ring of Fire this week. If you want more Ring of Fire, including access to all the member exclusives and our entire Ring of Fire archives, go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. And for even more Ring of Fire every single day of the week, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/theringoffire. You can also support the show on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/theringoffire. And you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Farron Balanced. We hope you enjoyed this week's program. And until then, we'll talk to you again next week.